by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Yeah! Hi, everybody. Thanks, bud. Good job, Matt.
Happy Friday,
everyone.
Happy
Friday, my friend.
We made it to the weekend and we're still employed. Round of applause.
I feel really guilty, and I think you've mentioned this before, that I don't feel like this is work. And I know that that's a cheeseburger thing to say. I know, that's so cheesy. And I won't say out loud that I do this even if they didn't pay me.
You just did.
I would never say out loud. I would never say out loud. 5,000 people, that's how many, that's all we got? Really?
Rough guess.
No, come on, it's way more. It's at least 200,000 people listening to this show.
I don't read the ratings, it makes me
paranoid. At least 200,000 people listening to this show. I'd say 250,000 people listening to this show. And if you keep me going, I'd say pretty soon we'll have almost 300,000 people listening to this show. So, anywho, Cairo Radio is a big time deal. And we're glad to be here. But it is an enjoyable thing to do this. So when folks are already starting their weekend and we're just now coming into work at 7 o'clock at night, I feel like I'm already – I mean, I started my weekend Monday at 7. You know, every night we get to do this. This isn't
Now, to be fair, there is a lot of work by everyone here on the back end of the shows that goes in before the shows. Like, we're here earlier than this. Just
No. I hear you.
Wondering.
And you actually work. You do a lot of you make sure our sponsorships, our endorsers, the advertisers that we work with in partnership to get their messages out to the audience. You do all that. You make sure those commitments are met. I just sit here and blow smoke and make stuff up.
Oh, I do that too.
Well, I know you do, but see, you're doing both. You're really working. You bring experience and insight and your taste to the show, as well as punching all the buttons. They don't let me touch buttons. They barely let me dress myself.
That is true. When I came to Cairo, one of the things that was an adjustment from working at previous radio stations is realizing how little of the control stuff is in the talent side of the building.
I know, and they call us the talent. Isn't that hilarious?
See, I'm used to running my own board while I was a DJ, so I had it all there.
I've never been allowed to run my own board. I've been radio for 33 years now. I'll be starting my 34th year here soon. I've never been allowed to push buttons. That's not fair. I've done a few shifts over the years where I was doing a night shift or at a music station, picking up a weekend shift for somebody. Back when they thought, do you want to be your own guy? Do you want to not be a sidekick all your life? Do you want to be a lead someday? And I got to do that, and it's tedious. It's nerve-wracking because you want it to go so well. You want it to go so perfect and tight and segues. I mean, a guy who can make a great segue is an artist.
Oh, I agree.
And you got it down. These days you're subjected to computers and digital starts and all the things that, you know, when I started radio before you were born. I know you're a little older than I know. But you weren't old enough to pick up a record, let alone
that is true.
I was just starting radio. We used to start records. I mean, you know, literally there were turntables in the studio, and you had those cart machines where you had to load the commercials in one at a time and hit buttons and start this and start that. And it was.
I do remember the cart machines because I think the second station I ever worked for still had the machine. We just didn't use it for anything, but it was still sitting in the studio.
When we started in the late 80s. Here in town, my partner Bob Rivers and I, the cart machine was how you – there weren't computer screens with a library of all the things we had. There were turntables, and we had at that time a CD library as well, and there were CD machines that you would queue up a CD, and you could fast forward into a CD to make sure the song started exactly when you wanted to hit the button and start that segue we were talking about. But all the sound effects we used, all the different music beds we used for various pieces and elements and segments of our show were all on cart. And you had to put them in order and hit them in order and use them and time up your story with your boo sound effect or whatever it was. So you do a lot of work. And I know you enjoy what we do. So when I say that Matt and I come in here at 7 o'clock every night and it feels like we're on vacation and you guys get to tune in and listen – I mean that. I really do. This is the greatest gig on the face of the earth, short of, you know, Emperor, which I hear is pretty good.
And no matter how stressful my day has been or whatever else I'm dealing with in my life, when that theme song hits and we're on the air, it is always fun and it is always a rush. I love it. I love what we do.
I appreciate that. And I hope you guys don't mind I'm drinking during the show because it's Friday. And again, I'm not supposed to touch any buttons. I can.
That's why we took the buttons out of the studio.
I can enjoy a libation while we deliver it for the city, while we perform, you know? Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, Fridays. It's playoff time. I mean, I know the whole city's kind of going bonzo right now for the Mariners, and rightfully so, because it has been 21 years, and you've all heard it before, and we're you know, belaboring the point right now. But the Mariners' playoff drought is the longest drought by any professional team, and I'll say this, of the Big Four. I know that there are other professional leagues, whether it be the WNBA, professional soccer and the Sounders or whatnot, but of the, you know, MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, the Big Four, if you will, and no disrespect intended, but of the Big Four, the 21-year Mariner postseason drought is the longest of any team in any of those sports. Every other city in every other sport of major sports has been to the postseason since the Mariners went. So the fact that the M's are on the precipice of a wild card spot is phenomenal. And all the news stations, I think Cairo, I think Bump and Stacey were down at the ballpark today broadcasting live. I've got a chance to do that in my career over the years, to broadcast from outside of at the time, I think it was the Clink. It may have even been Seahawks Stadium. I've broadcast from spring training over the years down in Peoria, Arizona for the Mariners preseason schedules. It's a blast when the city gets fired up for pro sports. It's an absolute blast. And the M's, you know, they're on the brink of a wild card spot. And I was trying to tell Lisa this and explain this to Lisa. She had a feature in that news story about Mariner playoff tickets are already for sale. And I'm not sure if they're even sold out yet. But it depends upon where we land in the rankings of wild card play, if we get a wild card home game or not. I'll try to boil this down to really easy. There are three wild card teams, and there are three division champions. Every year, there's a Central, an East, and a West. So there are three champions. All will have home series. And the three wild cards, only the number one seed gets a home series. And the three wild card teams, one plays two at the higher seeds park. And number three of the wild cards plays the worst division winner. So the two and three wild cards never get a home playoff game unless they advance past the wild card round, which are best of threes. So while we're all joyous about the M's, maybe clinching tonight, magic number down to one. The Baltimore Yankees game is still a 2-1 in the ninth. We'll try to keep you updated. But if we don't get the number one wild card seed, we'll play the entire wild card round on the road. Whether it's the number three wild card playing against the division number three, which would be, I think, the Cleveland Guardians at this section. And I think that one's locked in, that the three wild card will play at Cleveland. Or for the second wild card, we'll play whoever's in the first seed. Right now, we trail Toronto by a game and a half in the wild card standings overall. So the M's still have a chance to be the number one wild card seed and host games at T-Mobile Park. Hopefully, that's the tickets folks were buying today when they went on sale. The M's can catch up to the Blue Jays in the wild card race, overtake them, and play home playoff games even in the wild card round. It's a blast. It's an absolute blast when the city's abuzz for postseason. We've had this Seahawk experience of late. Lots of playoff experiences for the Seahawks. The city's been crazy for Seahawk football. It's been far too long since the city's been crazy for the Mariners. I know we came close last year, and folks get playoff fever down the stretch in September. It's great that baseball has expanded the postseason to three wild cards, along with the three divisional winners, and that the wild card teams get a series, not just a one-game sudden-death playoff, which it used to be. Gets more cities involved. Gets more cities, more fans, I should say. It's all about the fans. Gets more fans involved in following their team in a postseason chase. I mean, up until a couple of days ago, you know, the Orioles had a legitimate shot at maybe catching the slumping Mariners, who are riddled with injuries down the stretch here. Really, they're limping to the finish line. Great game last night, though, by 11 innings. A phenomenal, phenomenal finish with Texas. Just a massive shootout last night with the Rangers. But more cities are involved. More fans are involved. That's why they expanded the postseason, why they expanded the wild cards, so we can all get involved and enjoy this feeling of a pennant race, a pennant chase. We're in it. and the M's tonight may lock in a playoff spot. It'd be fantastic. Toronto, who has said leads the wild card races, they're a game and a half up on us right now. They're already decimating. They're 8-0, I think the score right now is with them and the Blue Jays. Or 9-0 now. Yeah, it's even worse. Blue Jays are up 9-0. So that one's pretty much done. They're pretty much. I don't think it might even be a final by now. And now it's the bottom of the ninth in New York. Orioles still leading the Yankees 2-1. I keep giving that score because if the Orioles managed to lose, the Yankees managed to come back from behind the bottom of the ninth and win this game against Baltimore, we're in. That's the one. That's the magic number of one. One Mariner win or Oriole loss. So the M's could make the playoffs tonight before the game's even over if the Orioles manage to blow this lead in New York in the bottom of the ninth. We'll see what happens. Anywho, hi, guys. Hi, everybody. Yeah, drinking on the job's fun. I like it. Little Mariner update for you there. Oh, by the way, Huskies are playing tonight down in California. Taking on the 4-0 UCLA Bruins. Huskies ranked 15th in the nation after a 4-8 season last year. New coaching staff. Whole new squad. New quarterback. 4-0 Huskies. Haven't played outside of Husky Stadium yet. It's their first road game of the year. And it's October. Tomorrow's October. Phenomenal. And it's Friday night football in the Pac-12. And the Pac-12. How long will we get to say the Pac-12? You know, with UCLA and USC already saying they're bugging out to the Big Ten, there's talk that the Pac, whatever it may be no more soon. The realignment of college affiliation in the way of conferences, it's ridiculous how many teams have jumped and moved conferences and realignments and all these things and people trying to position themselves to make more money. It's what it's all about. The conference affiliations are about TV contracts and universities making money. And universities making money through sports, I'm not saying that's a bad thing at all because it's entertaining for us, the fans, and universities who make money through athletics provide opportunities for student athletes. You know, the football team at UW makes a lot of money, and that helps a lot of athletes, a lot of student athletes, whether you're on the rowing team or the gymnastics team or the tennis team or the soccer team or the softball team, whatever team, basketball, baseball, you name it, whatever team you're on. When that university makes money through athletics, that lets student-athletes take part in sports, collegiate sports. I've said this before. I've got two daughters. I made sure both of them took part in team sports. Not because I thought my kid could be a pro athlete or even win a college scholarship to help pay for schools, because we all know college has gotten ridiculously expensive. I think everybody benefits from having being a team player, being on a sports team. It doesn't have to be sports. It can be dance. Can be drill team. It can be a chess team. It can be whatever. Be a debate team. The thought that you are committed to something, accountable to your teammates, supportive of your teammates, that you've got a bigger objective and goal than just yourself and a personal goal. Being part of a team's phenomenal experience for any kid. Every kid would benefit from being part of some team at some point in their life. So when universities lose teams to other conferences, or when the Pac-12 gets decimated by poaching from the more powerful, rich conferences like the Big Ten, like the SEC, whatever it may be, it's kind of sad to watch it just die in front of us, the Pac-12. When I moved to town, it was still the Pac-10. It was prior to Colorado and Utah joining the conference. But those two schools did that for reasons of financial gain and to help their student-athletes at Utah, at Colorado, gain a national stage for their student-athletes, gain better funding for their athletic programs, to involve more students in their athletic programs. You know, the NCAA loves to run a commercial during their broadcast, and this is across all different conferences, about student-athletes, about what a small percentage of student-athletes go on to make money as a pro athlete. I mean, it's a minuscule number of collegiate athletes who end up going pro, to have pro careers. But they show these student athletes who excel in whatever field they're in, whether it's law, medicine, engineering, you name it, whatever field, business, whatever field you go into, student athletes pick up these skill sets and the self-confidence to be more successful in life. I think scholar athletes It's a phenomenal experience for anybody to have in their life. Like I said, I made sure my daughters were part of teams, even in high school. My youngest was a member of the swim and water polo team. And she wasn't the fastest swimmer, and she wasn't the strongest in the pool and water polo, but she had tremendous experiences and tremendous benefits from being involved in those team sports. You know, I think my kid's a leader. I really do. A lot of the coaches who have coached my child tell me that. You know, your kid's a natural-born leader. And she was able to feel that and grow that skill, that quality, as a member of a team sport. So when the Huskies take on UCLA tonight down in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl, the world-famous, the famous Rose Bowl, those student-athletes are helping that university make money, entertain us as fans, and help all these kids have a better experience in their educational experience in school and have a better life from taking part in student athletics. And I've avoided for the last 15 minutes talking about this kid at Edmonds Woodway who brought a gun to school, you know, a ghost gun. And for those of you who don't know what a ghost gun is, it just means any gun that's not that's homemade.
More specifically, it refers to what is a fairly recent phenomena of people grabbing plans off the internet to build untraceable firearms. There were court cases about it, et cetera, but the plans are already out there, leaked out there. So now people want to build these guns that are untraceable by the ATF that have no record and own firearms that nobody knows anything about, which then when they use them in the commission of a crime are untraceable. Diaz, interim chief at the time, several months back, now the chief of police in Seattle, he said that there have been a significant increase in the numbers of ghost guns being recovered by SPD.
Seriously?
Yes. This has become an increased problem right here in our city.
And this was up at Edmonds Woodway, a little bit outside the city, the Edmonds School District, not the Seattle School District, but it's a problem there too. It's not just a problem for Seattle. I mean, we've got a lot of problems in Seattle. Guns are obviously a massive problem. You know, as guns and our youth are becoming an even bigger problem as crime permeates, younger and younger and younger ages as we go. But, you know, that's not my kid. My kid's now moved on to college, but that wasn't her high school. But I know numerous students at Edmonds Woodway because these were students that were former classmates of my kid who were a year behind. That we know these families, we know these students, I know their parents. For the school to get on lockdown because somebody brought a gun to school, it's horrific news. I thought our own Sam Cunningham at Cairo did a great job covering that for us. You know, it's every parent's worst nightmare. You know, we had the story earlier this week about the gentleman's going to stand outside of schools in Kitsap, you know, and help protect students, taking upon himself to be another layer of security, and whether that's good, bad, or, you know, there are wonderful benefits of having somebody so involved in the community. There are dangerous potential side effects of people feeling they have the right, let alone the need.
And the questions this raises, too, is, first of all, if this is one of these ghost guns, how is this kid getting a hold of it? Is he making it himself? Is he getting it from someone who made it? Or are his parents the types of people that would do something like that, and then they're just not securing their already illegal gun? I hate the road this goes down.
No, I hear you, man. I hear you. That's why.
Where is he getting the gun in the first place? Especially this type of gun. Like, well, it's not his dad's hunting rifle.
Right. And there are lots of stories of kids who bring guns to school for whatever reason. Maybe it's just to show it off. Maybe you're going to threaten somebody. Maybe you've got really horrific intent. We don't know. And the story really hasn't been fully explained yet. What this 15-year-old was thinking or planning with that gun that he brought to school. What we do know is that somebody in the grapevine at school caught wind because the kid obviously had told someone, shown someone, that he brought a gun to school. And somebody said something. See something, say something.
This type of stuff is never going to stop until we also prosecute reckless parents.
And that's an excellent point. I'm not sure what the case is in this particular incident, whether this kid got a gun from his parents, which was carelessly kept in the home, or what? We'll let you know more as I learn more, as we learn more here at Cairo. It is 7:25. Welcome to Cairo Nights on a Friday night. I'm Spike O'Neill. That's Matt Butler. We've got a lot to cover tonight. Keep it posted on everything baseball, maybe even Husky football score if we get going And we'll be right back. So we're glad you're with us.
You know what I'm thinking.
I know.
Right?
I hear it's an inside joke, everybody. Welcome back to Cairo Nights at 7:33. Lisa, thank you so much for the updates. We talked a little bit about the story of a student bringing a gun to school at Edmonds Woodway and referenced that it was labeled as a ghost gun. It was identified as a ghost gun in the story by our own Sam Cunningham. And apparently the serial number had been ground off of or scratched off of the gun, so it couldn't be identified. Another way of defining what is a ghost gun is not just a homemade weapon made outside the confines of a manufactured or military-made weapon.
Well, do we have a definitive answer on what it was exactly?
No,
we know enough about the case.
No, I hear you. In this story, it was a weapon that had the serial number scratched off to remain untraceable. That's why it was classified as a ghost gun, as opposed to something that was, fabricated through. They can be fabricated through 3D printers or made from various homemade things that you can turn into a weapon. All those things are element.
What it means is, to be more technical, that there are no serialized parts
in the manufacture of this
homemade gun.
Exactly. And what we don't know, and what they're still investigating, and police are investigating, so they aren't making many public statements, which is how you make a good investigation. You keep your cards close to your vest so that you don't tip off people that you're trying to figure out, investigate what the heck went on. We don't know how this 15-year-old got the gun or where it came from, how he became in possession of it. Those things are still being investigated. What is known is that this 15-year-old has been placed into the Denny Correctional Facility, charged with 3 different crimes, illegal possession of a handgun, or a firearm, bringing a firearm onto school grounds, and being in possession of a weapon with the identifications removed, which is a crime in itself, scratching a number off of a registered weapon.
And normally I try to say have empathy and, reach these troubled kids or whatever, but is it just me, or are we not? I'm getting a little sick of this. I'm getting a little sick of seeing so many of these incidents because children who may be troubled are accessing guns. It seems to be getting worse, and I'm really starting to lose my patience with the tolerance and the empathy of help these poor troubled kids. And I'm starting to lean towards a lock 'em up mentality. Am I way off on that, Spike?
No, but you're I can understand the frustration, buddy. I really can. Everybody is deserving of understanding, and here comes my, rainbow lollipop unicorn world.
You optimist, you.
I am such a, glass half full of scotch optimist. Everyone deserves the benefit of the doubt, the assumption of innocence until proven guilty. We are too quick in this society to jump to the conclusions and expect the worst in folks. I hear what you're saying, though. When it becomes an avalanche of stories, it's hard to muster up the empathy, the understanding, the compassion that we all should be able to expect from each other and figuring out what the hell's going on in our world. People have a very low opinion of the media these days. And it's deserved in most instances. In most instances, it's deserved. Media has turned from what used to be a reputable way for the populace to be informed. There were men of the nightly news that brought you what was going on in the world, what was important and worth and important that it's become a sales tool. It's become, in a lot of cases, a propaganda wing of whatever political party you affiliate yourself with. The spin zones have become intolerable, and it's hard to know where to get good information anymore. It really is. It's hard to know where you can find reliable, unbiased.
But a lot of the anti-media rhetoric that we see comes from people who have substituted with their own forms of media where people are also profiting. How many times have we been texted links to, I will not name the site, but the site of Alex Jones and other like-minded sites?
Right.
These people are are, I won't say cults, I'll just imply it, but they are groups that profit or want to push their propaganda onto other people, and people tell us, the media, oh, that's the real media, the alternative media. It's not.
Absolutely. I know people who won't trust what they hear unless it comes from outside the borders of the U.S., whether it's the BBC or
Russia Today.
Well, RT's hardly.
No, but there are a lot of people who I have heard, they will come to me and they'll cite that as a source. Hey, you should listen to the other perspective from Vladimir Putin's propaganda network. Okay,
right,
great.
Right. There's a lot to consider. It behooves us all to seek out accurate information. I wish it was easier. I wish we as the media didn't make it harder to get accurate information. Sometimes we make it harder than it has to be. I will tell you that the Cairo newsroom over there, just to my right, Matt's left as we sit here in the studio for you, that's a reliable, honest, trustworthy news source. The opinion shows that we run and other networks run, you know, those are opinions. They could be wrong. Opinions, you know what they say? They're like, you know, opinions are like that body part. Everybody's got one. But we do try to give you factual information. We give you our opinions on the world as we see it. Of course we do. We've got biases and prejudice and spin that we bring to every thought and conversation. Of course we do, as do you, the audience. We'll happily engage with you on every topic that we bring up or that you'd like to bring up. We will. We'll happily discuss and engage with every one of you on every topic.
But
that's why we're here.
But there's a difference between personal bias in interpretation of a situation or the solution and outright lying or manipulating or trying to make people afraid.
Well, because there's money in that. There's a vast difference in those two things. Of course there is. The reason that the latter exists is because there's a profit to be made. When the networks were given airtime by the FCC, the Federal Communication Commission, and a lot of people right there, when you say the word federal, they will immediately lose trust in that. But the FCC doesn't give you news or its opinion. It provides the airways with which information is transmitted to the public. That's what the FCC does. It's not a news organization. It's the wing of the government, the branch of the government that delivers to the American people the ability to communicate with you, the Federal Communications Commission. And what initially was the plan was the FCC gave these television networks use of public airways. You know, you've heard that term public airways as opposed to private airways, like, you know, pay channels, subscription services, networks like NBC, Fox, whatever, CNN.
People don't realize that companies don't actually own the airwaves.
That's what I'm trying to say.
The airwaves are set up as a public trust.
Right.
We have the privilege as long as we follow the rules of having the license to broadcast on air that is supposed to belong to the public.
That's what I'm saying. And it used to be that the news networks had a responsibility in exchange for use of those public airwaves. They would deliver factual, unbiased news to the American people. You know, at a texter, FCC, Federal Crap Commission. So if you would just listen to what we're saying, the FCC doesn't transmit opinion. They don't transmit news. They don't transmit spin. What they do is they regulate the public airways that various news organizations or broadcast networks use to send information to the public. If you've got an issue with what's coming over the airways, it's not with the FCC. It's with the people who are using that public airways to bring you information. And I'm going to turn off the text because I'm going to stop engaging with individual texters. It doesn't do me any good. There was a time.
I think it makes for very entertaining radio.
Maybe it does. There was a time when newsmen could be trusted to deliver to you just the story in an unbiased capacity. That was governed over by the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine was a law that said in exchange for use of public airways, you will deliver facts to the people. The Fairness Doctrine was overturned during the mid-80s by the Reagan administration, which allowed the networks to use the news any way they saw fit. And what they saw was a way to make higher profits by engaging an audience, keeping an audience, serving that audience. Usually fear is a factor that all networks use, all branches of military use, of media use. There's a nice Freudian slip for you. All branches of media use to engage and hold their audience, to feed into beliefs they've already got, to speak to, you know, it's always good to reaffirm what you already believe. You'll keep coming back.
And
it's like a sugar high. It's a dope hit for your brain.
Even if something being presented is factual, if it's presented in a way that's too dry, most people won't listen to or watch it. That's why in-depth reporting and real factual reporting is of interest to fewer people. Fewer people care about the broader picture of their world in the way that some of us who are real news hounds do.
Well,
if it bleeds, it leads.
It's
entertainment
factor. Right.
So even if what's being reported is true, the presentation style has to be amped up.
We've become, as a consuming public, more needy of extremism. You know, our threshold for entertainment and engagement has been raised higher and higher and higher. The easy things don't impress us anymore. Reality shows where you just stay alive on an island, we're tired of that. I'm waiting for Cannibal Island. You know, three people, two forks, one gets off alive. That's what, you know, as we keep raising the stakes of what we need to be engaged, what it takes to make us happy and satisfied customers, it's getting a little scary. This music's scaring the crap out of me. Anyway, hi, everybody. We're glad you're here. It's Cairo Nights. As we mentioned in the pennant race, we're still in the playoff race. The pennant is, of course, the AL, the NL. That's the pennant. That's the pennant we're after. M's are taking on the A's tonight at T-Mobile. Orioles have already won. Rays have already won. Jays have already won. Everybody in the wild card race has already won tonight. With one more win, the Mariners can lock themselves into postseason play. We'll keep you updated as we go forward. I'm Spike O'Neill. That's Matt Butler. It's Cairo Nights. Hi, welcome back, everybody. Matt, I'm a little weirded out tonight. Is this Pink Floyd?
This is Roger Waters' solo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounded like, something's like, oh, no, Roger, it's a little too weird for the wall, you know?
Ugh. Good point, though.
You know, that's funny. Roger Waters just played through town recently for his This Is Not a Drill tour. And I'm a big Pink Floyd fan, always have been a big Pink Floyd fan. I remember as a teenager, you know, getting my uncle's Dark Side of the Moon record with a set of headphones and just, you know, okay, convert for life kind of a moment. Waters has some unique political views, and sometimes it is hard to separate an artist from their political views. I know a lot of people get down on a lot of artists for their political stances, whether it's, you know, my own personal hero, Bruce Springsteen, who's very liberal, whatever it might be. We've talked to this before about how various artists are fans of a certain political agenda, political candidate, political campaign, whatever, political party. And it makes it's hard to separate your love for an artist from their beliefs. And we all have our opportunity to use our platform for whatever causes we feel are important and worthy of the spotlight. Roger Waters has made no secrets and has no qualms. About saying some of the things he believes from a global political standpoint.
Have there ever been any artists for you that you were deeply disappointed by? Not necessarily their politics. Like, you can disagree with, say, Alice Cooper.
Right.
You still dig his songs.
Yes.
Were there ever any artists that you felt crossed a line for you and made it harder to be a fan because of the way they acted or political extremes that they went to?
Yeah, it's easy to come up with an example. It was Ted Nugent.
Ah.
I was raised, I'm going to be 60 years old soon, and I was raised in the 70s, you know, Ted Nugent was a god, a guitar god. If you don't like, you know, Intensities in 10 Cities or, you know, Cat Scratch Fever that guy's a great guitar player, a great rock and roll icon, and he's a conservative, and I have no problem with that. But when he brings a machine gun on stage and talks about shoving up body parts of various female presidential candidates from our past, I think you know who I'm talking about. That's a bridge too far. You know, that's implied violence against your political opponent. And I don't care what side you're on. No one has the justification for violence to make a political point. That's just no. you know, I wouldn't want anybody from your side or my side doing that. That's no. So, yeah, Ted lost me at that point. And I find it really hard to separate my, you know, opinions of that move by Ted Nugent from his music, which I truly did enjoy. Not anymore.
For me, it was Morrissey of the Smiths. His solo work meant so much to me as a teenager, but when he started supporting far-right British nationalists,
yeah,
anti-immigrant right. sentiments, thank God for Johnny Marr or that band would have been ruined.
You know, and these artists have every right to their opinions and to use their platform and the spotlight it brings to help get their to make their opinions known.
And I have every right not to listen.
Bingo, you nailed it. And we have the right as consumers to use. Okay, if that's important enough to you, it's important to me that I don't patronize your shows, I don't buy your records, I don't listen to your music anymore. It's Cairo Nights. A lot to talk about tonight, folks. We're just getting started. Don't go anywhere. I'm Spike O'Neill. That's Matt Butler. We'll be right back.